Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, the football year-end awards special, joined by Chris Baines and Matt Oper, three-man group back together. How's it going, Chris?
I'm good, Scott. We are back to wrap up the season. Matt, I think, has a pulse after surviving a rough retail season. How you doing, Matt?
Alive and well. I'm about to start 8 well-needed days of not doing anything.
That's good to hear. So we have football talk. UC just got their final coaches and AP poll rankings. 23rd in the coaches, 24th in the AP. For last time they finished in the top 25 was 2012, where they finished 22nd in the AP poll. Real quick before we get into postseason awards, what are you guys kind of overall thoughts on the season? Are you excited or happy about the season, or is there anything you'd like to nitpick? Don't all speak at once.
I mean, there are surely nits to be picked, but like, this isn't the time for that. Like, this is so far beyond what any of us thought was in the realm of possibilities, and the fact that they pulled it off and got it done is remarkable. It really is. The last time there was a group like a young group like this that was all together was back in 2005. That's where you got the start of the run that led to the Brian Kelly era, right? With Mike Mickens, Terrell Bird, all those kids who were playing extremely young. And their first year, they were not good. And their second year, they were outstanding. This group is far ahead of that schedule. They took that group 2-3 years to build to that point where they could, you know, go in and knock off a number 8 nationally ranked Rutgers at home. This team still has to get to that level in terms of knocking off the big dog in the conference, in this case UCF. But where they're at, I mean, like, the progression is usually first you take care of the shitty teams, then you take care of the okay teams, and then you take care of the good teams. And it's usually like a 3-year process. And they knocked out the shitty and okay teams with ease this year. So now it's just up to them to take that next step and take down the big dog of the conference.
As well as, like, the team they can't beat in Temple, who just seems to have their number every single year. But yeah, I have to go with Matt here. Like, overall, this is, like, great season. Like, 11 wins. I think if, like, you even did, like, your wildest predictions, I don't think any of us came up with 11 wins. Like, it's, like, a really fantastic season. Like the fourth time UC's ever been ranked in the, like, final AP poll, all since 2007, to go, like, with Matt's point about how, like, the program's really, like, risen and seems like to be back up on the rise. And like we talked about a little last week as the news broke, but like Luke Fickell staying for a third year, it's like a pretty big jumping off point. So at least you know you have a solid coach who like really like raised up the roster this season, especially like on the defensive end. And like the offense like ended up coming around and like being better as well. Like they finished in the top 60 on offense, top 25 on defense. If like they can get the special teams like to not be garbage, this could be like a really like elite team and like probably the best group of 5 team, or if not the best, one of the best. But yeah, just like a really like great season, like top to bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, let's just jump right into the postseason award or the postseason awards, kind of putting a nice bow on this very good season. Best game. You could probably pick from a lot, I feel like, but there's probably, I feel like, but this is going to be one of the ones we're going to have a lot of different picks. Scott, what was your best game of the season?
My best game probably isn't a surprise because I've like mentioned the Ohio game like 78 times. I thought it was the most fun game top to bottom this season. Houston gets off to a terrible start, like getting blown out. Like, they just form, like, a gigantic second-half rally. Like, Desmond Ridder, like, makes a bunch of big plays. Mike Ward makes a bunch of big plays. Wiggins has the game ceiling pick when it looked like Ohio was going to win the game at the end. Like, top to bottom, fantastic game. Like, Ohio ended up being, like, the second best team they played, according to S&P. And I thought that was the most fun game. Because it was the most surprising game. Because I didn't think they would get, like, their ass beat by Ohio like they did. And it was, like, the beginning of their gigantic third quarters, which, like, carried on through, like, almost the entire rest of the season. So, yeah, that was my game of the year.
For me, it's the SMU game. Just because, not so much because that was the best game they played, but because of what that game ended up meaning in the course of the season. For a young team like this, it's really easy to let that first loss of the year really snowball, especially against a team like Temple, which is incredibly tough to play, especially for the offense. And the hangover was evident. I mean, the performance in that game was not great from the offense. By any stretch of the imagination, it was the worst offensive outing of the year, other than the UCLA game. And despite all that, despite having everything go against them, despite the defense suddenly not being able to stop, you know, a 5-yard pass, they still went in there and got the job done eventually. And the way it ended with the Wiggins pick six, I mean, how much can you say about James Wiggins this year? He was just an unbelievable player. He single-handedly closed three games. That's not something you often hear, you know, people talk about with safeties. That's a quarterback thing, is closing games. But he came up with the right play, you know, the biggest play at the right moments time and time again.
Yeah, I think those are both really good options for all those reasons you guys mentioned. Those guys, SMU and Ohio were definitely the top three in my mind. But I picked UCLA. Just because when we go back to the first part of our conversation, no one had this team winning 11 games. I had them at 6-6, 7-5 at best. I thought the UCLA game was going to be a complete blowout on the other side of it. A lot of the bettors did as well. I think they were like 10.5 point dogs going into that game. And it was the first time in a while where they were double-digit dogs and ended up winning a game fairly handedly. And UCLA ended up having a pretty much garbage season. They're still adjusting to Chip Kelly's offense. They ended up finishing stronger than a lot of people thought they would after the UC game, but the way that no one gave UC a chance in that game, and the Bearcats really came out punching and setting a strong tone for the rest of the season. They have a feisty, stout defense that is very turnover prone and will knock you in the mouth, and they're not a finesse football team anymore. They will come out there and pound the rock. They'll punch you in the face defensively. The way Michael Bourne sealed it at the end, the way Fickell showed that he has the balls to go for it on fourth down on the road in a game where he could, or in a situation where he could have kicked a field goal and padded a lead, he put the game completely out of the hands of UCLA by just giving it to Michael Bourne. All of those little things in that game set the tone for the rest of the season, and that was my best game of the season. Any other candidates other than those three?
I think the Military Bowl definitely had to be a candidate, given the dramatic way it ended, the late game comeback. I was surprised. We actually did have three different choices. That was a good call by you, Chris. Trying to think through what other ones stood out. The Tulane game stood out as a really solid game. I think that was one of their better efforts, offensively and defensively. A best game performance wise. I think you'd have to look at Tulane as one that stood out. At least that game ended up being a game against a team that ended up making a bowl, unlike the UConn games or the East Carolina game.
Well, I think the UConn game was kind of interesting because that was one of those games that last year would have sent alarm bells ringing because first drive of the game, UConn gets the ball, has a great script, marches it right down the field. In previous years, in previous regimes, that would have been a recipe for disaster, even though the team had been playing well to that point. But they just responded and like that reeled off like 35 points in the next 20 minutes of gameplay, and it was done. The response to that was really impressive to me. And I know UConn's a really shitty team, but just the way they went about handling their business on the road in that game was impressive to me.
Yeah, I kind of almost went sort of that UConn route by going with Navy, just comparing how they played against Navy last season to what they did this season. Completely opposite performance. Navy could do nothing on the ground. UC was playing their second stringers a little after halftime. They kept talking about how Marcus Freeman spent a lot of the offseason just picking the brains of people who face triple options and figuring out how to stop them. And all of that effort and, extra effort and information came to fruition on the field in that defense. And it was just a very nice, complete, fun blowout game. I almost picked that game as the best game of the season, but I stuck with UCLA just for all the reasons I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the UConn game, like, I kind of like agree. That might be like a little underrated. Like, UConn was like really trash, but like UC had lost at UConn the last time they played there. It was the first true road game of the season, and they nearly lost at UConn last season too. I think it was like a, and it was like the first time they actually like beat somebody's ass who was not an FCS team. In a long time, it seemed. Yeah, it's an underrated one.
Yeah. All right, let's flip the script and go to worst game. I'm going to start with you, Matt.
Oh, good. I get to take the obvious one, Temple.
Duh.
You do.
Go ahead.
That was a game that was in their hands, and like just in the palm of their hands so many different times, and they just couldn't close the fingers and grab it. Really disappointing in a lot of different ways. The offense was at its most moribund. Like, it was the least, you know, imaginative, creative offense that you can imagine. And you can't really do that against a defense that is as stout as Temple. And I know Temple has cycled through quite a few defensive coordinators now, but their basic structure never changes. And they're just so aggressive defensively, and it's... You know, you could tell that they were in the head of Desmond Ridder. And the coaching staff's inability to make an adjustment and kind of change the approach to mitigate some of that was, you know, desperately disappointing. They should have won it so many different times, but they just couldn't quite pull it out. And that's... Yeah, there's only two to choose from, so that's probably the worst game for me.
Yeah, I mean, that was the same. I picked Temple as well for all of those reasons, but also the little annoyances that occurred in that game. The Temple touchdown where they called him out of bounds and then they reversed it. The field goal that everyone on TV saw go through the uprights that the refs said didn't count because it didn't come out of a media timeout, and then Cole Smith ends up missing it. The back and forth at the end of the game, trading interceptions and turnovers, where UC, like you mentioned, had the game in their hands and just could not finish, and then the way they lost in overtime. Just those little tiny annoyances that just pissed me off about that game, even more so than the other possibly opposite or possibly obvious worst game you could pick from. What are your thoughts, Scott?
I think it's definitely that one. Just like the way like UC gets the ball, like interception, like in Temple territory, it go three and out. Temple marches down the field, like scores the tying touchdown, like three plays in overtime. Temple scores third and 10, a 25-yard touchdown pass. UC, like what a bad snap, ends up like at the 40-yard line, like on their drive, and Ridder throws a pick. Like, it's just, like, a really awful game. Like, the way they blew it was terrible. I think it was, like, their, like, objectively their worst game offensively. And, like, really, like, the first sign was, like, oh, yeah, Desmond Ridder is playing, like, his first games against these really tough teams. And they really struggled to do anything in that game. Which was, like, not really a surprise, but it was after a bye week, too. And after they'd been playing so well offensively in the lead-up to that. But I think like the next worst to me would be SMU, just because like that game, it looked like they could have like dominated SMU, and they probably should have. Like they laid an egg in that one, really bad. They did come back to win, as Matt mentioned. It was one of like the best games, but it was also one of the worst. I think it was their worst performance this year.
Yeah, and that's funny because that was kind of my top three rankings right there was Temple, SMU, and then UCF. And I had Temple ahead of UCF for those exact reasons. UC just completely shat themselves in that game. I mean, every other game this season where they were playing an average to below average opponent, they either controlled her for most of the game and one-handedly, or they just outright blew them out. They did really neither of that against an overmatched SMU team where, you know, UC did as many things to kick themselves in the foot or shoot themselves in the foot as Temple did to beat them. Or SMU did to beat them.
Yeah, and there's a theme with the worst games of the year. It's the offense not really showing up. We're not really having a clearly delineated plan. And that's kind of in stark contrast to, I know you guys already talked about the bowl game, but what I was most impressed with in that game was Denver had his most creative game plan for what to do with Desmond Ridder all season. Like, he showed more looks, more concepts in that first drive with Ridder than he showed at any point this year, which gives me a lot of hope going into next year. If they're not going to make a coaching change, then at least Denver has the ability to kind of tap into what Ridder can do. And then Desmond goes out and he's got Hayden Moore and he still has a plan that works, still has something that functions. And, you know, that was one of the best offensive performances of the year. And it came in a game where, you know, your talisman, future quarterback, all everything guy is out. So that was kind of a really impressive performance, at least from Denbrock for me.
Just by like their offensive percentile performance, like 91% in the bowl game, their highest of the season. And it rained too that game. So I think you could look at the Miami game. Like that game, just like performance wise, just was like not very good. Like neither team could move the ball. Like there's 6 total scoring opportunities in the entire game, and it ended up being 21-0. Like what neither team could do anything offensively. Just really boring.
Well, yeah, that game after a quarter, it's like, okay, I know how this is going to end. I don't know the final score, but I know how this is going to go.
Yeah.
As soon as you saw Miami trying to pass 40 times a game, you knew how it was going to end.
Well, you know, Chuck Martin is very much from the Brian Kelly school, and Brian Kelly is the guy who tried to pass the ball 50 times in a literal hurricane, you know? So chip off the old block.
Yep. All right, guys, jumping down to biggest surprise. What was your biggest surprise of the season? Game, player, position group? Let's go with you, Scott.
I think biggest surprise to me was Michael Warren. Like obviously, he was like one of the best offensive player on the team. But I really didn't know he had that in him. I didn't think he would be like a 1,300-yard back, like somebody who could just carry the team pretty much on his shoulders the entire season. Like, Dope's going down before the season started. Like, oh, can Michael Warren do it, or is it going to be some of these young guys? Like, oh, no, it's just Michael Warren the entire season, making every big play in, like, the UCLA game, making every big play to end the season in the Virginia Tech game. Like, should have been, like, first-team all-conference, like, although there was a ton of competition. Like, he was my biggest surprise because I didn't think he was, like, an elite back, and it turns out he definitely is. And he should have another monster season next year. That guy kind of slept on his talent. So, like, that was a surprise to me.
Yeah, what about you, Matt?
Okay, so I'm not going to single out a single player. I'm just going to single out a nebulous concept. The youth of this team was the most surprising thing because it didn't show for most of the year. There were stretches where it did. you know, after they came out and punched UCF in the mouth in the first quarter, and then UCF responded and they didn't have something else, that's a time where they showed their youth. But other than that, there's not a lot of instances where you could tell that this was one of the youngest teams in college football that was way ahead of schedule. They looked and felt and played like a group that was much older and much more experienced than they actually were. And that's stuff that just doesn't happen in college football very often. You know, you can always tell when a team is young because they're usually bad. They're almost always bad, but not with this group. And that was the most surprising thing to me. And that's what I didn't see coming. Like, I had high hopes for this group, but I didn't think I would see the fruition of those hopes until next year, the year after that. The fact that they showed out the way they did this year gives me a lot of hope for the coming years and what this group can do when they stay together for another 2 or 3 years. It was just a remarkable achievement from an incredibly mature group of players.
Yeah, and I kind of, my biggest surprise kind of goes with a little bit of both of your guys' surprises. I picked the offensive line, and a hodgepodge unit, and a guy who just transferred in from Rhode Island, an ex-Ohio State player, a former walk-on, a former hockey player, like just the most ragtag group of offensive linemen you could probably put together. And they helped Michael Warren carve out a 1,300-yard, 19-touchdown season. They helped protect Ritter to a big degree. We didn't really see ourselves talking about the offensive line that much this year, and that's because they were all doing their jobs and performing exactly how they should have, how a good offensive line does. I was very impressed by them because coming into the season, that was my single biggest weakness, and I feel like that ended up being almost a big strength on this team. I could definitely see from your guys' perspective, Michael Warren, definitely a big surprise, especially taking on the load from what probably should have been half of Dokes' attempts. And then just like the overall youth, you mentioned, Matt, like it, we never saw it. I mean, who would have thought Desmond Ridder was a redshirt freshman in a lot of those games? Nobody thought he was a redshirt freshman. If you would just come in and watch any of those games, he's performing like a senior a lot of that time. And a lot of stuff that really should bode well for the team going forward. Flip side, biggest disappointment.
Yeah, just want like one more thing. Like in surprise,
oh, go ahead, Scott,
we didn't even talk about like DeGara like stepping up out of nowhere.
True,
like he had like a pretty monster year and was one of their most consistent receivers. Like another guy who didn't play a ton. Like their three of like their biggest like offensive pieces, like kind of really came out of nowhere, which I think says a lot to the coaching staff. But go ahead, Chris. What's your biggest disappointment of the season? You start off first this time.
I had Cole Smith, a guy out of Middletown who was tabbed as not a big leg, but an accurate leg, and he only made 5 of 12 field goals this year. He only made 2 outside of the 30-yard line. He was a point of a lot of inconsistencies throughout the season. UC didn't really need him in many cases because either they were getting themselves blown out by UCF or they had a lot of blowouts offensively this year where they just, they were basically going for it on fourth down just because they felt like it at the end of the third quarter rather than needing to go for it. The kicking game has been a big question mark ever since Andrew Gantz got injured a couple of years ago. Cole Smith was supposed to provide that stability, and granted, he is very young, but he's got to do a lot better next season. Otherwise, we're going to still be asking questions about that position. What about you, Matt?
It's really difficult to pick some nits with a group that went 11-2 and was just generally remarkable in every way, but the pass rush really wasn't that good, and they're losing 3 senior starters, so that's something. Hopefully they can address that next year, but it like, the defense was so good that it didn't really matter that they weren't very productive in terms of rushing the passer. And it didn't show up often, but when it did, it did really bit him in the ass. Temple, UCF, parts of the SMU game, you know, just stuff like that.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, especially when you're talking about a team that blitzed as much as they did, had as strong of a defensive line. I mean, you got to see more sacks, and they just never saw it. Scott, what do you have?
Mine was the UCF game. Like, obviously, the best team they played, but the entire second half of that game was UC getting destroyed. And, like, the game day game, like, national TV, ABC, Saturday night, like, matinee game, just like their worst performance on both sides of the ball for like 60 minutes. It's really outside of the first quarter, like never in the game. Like really disappointing. Like pretty much everything they did after the first quarter was awful. And it just was really sad to see on national TV.
Yeah. See, we kind of talked about this after the UCF game. I didn't really have many expectations going into that game, but yeah, when you lose 38-13 and aren't really competitive after the first like 15 minutes, hell, after really the first like 8 minutes, yeah, that was super disappointing. Are there any other candidates for this one? I mean, there's not a whole lot on point or 11-win team like Matt mentioned, but go ahead, Scott.
I would back you up on the kicking game. Just, like, the actual, like, place-kicking game. It's like 3 years in a row, like, UC's had terrible kicking. And, like, that's something you thought, like, they would turn around some way. But it seemed like it got even worse this season. I think it's not all on Cole Smith. But, like, it wasn't an improvement of what they had last year. And they didn't really have anything last year either. It's like, that's, like, the number one thing I think they have to improve next season. It's like, the rest of their special teams are pretty solid. Like, especially the punting game. Like, James Smith was amazing. We didn't mention him, like, earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he, another young guy who's just been really great. But, yeah, I think that was my runner-up, was the kicking game.
Yeah, I don't really have anything other than... Yeah, I don't have anything to add on that. I mean, you both had solid points for that. Kicking game, if they can ever get that right, man, they'd be really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to be able to go for it on fourth and really, one really a lot good. Of times, but
yeah,
you need to have a good kicker.
But my other, like, my third, like, thing on the list was the, like, that we didn't see, like, any of the other receivers outside of Khalil Lewis, like, really step up and break out this year. Like, a lot of guys, like, ended up having, like, big moments, but nobody was really consistent, like that, like second or third threat throughout the year. And I thought some of these younger guys would break out. It just seems like now that Lewis is going to, like, graduate and move on, it seems like there's a really big void in the receiving core.
Yeah, and there is a void, but I think they know who's going to fill that, because I think Jayshon Jackson is going to be special. The flashes that he showed this year, he are really, like, incredible, but he just needs to be more consistent. And that comes with time. And that comes with time with a quarterback. You know, one of the things that always suffers when you have a new group of receivers and a new quarterback is your communication, your continuity just isn't there. And it takes 2-3 years to really develop that. You know, if you think back to the best UC team of all time, the 2009 group, they were incredible on offense in 2009 because they were just okay with a whole bunch of new players in 2008. And the time that they all got to spend together with both quarterbacks in that 2008 season really, you know, really helped them in that 2009 campaign. And that's kind of where this group is. Like, this is that year before the storm. And I think next year they're going to be like levels above where they are right now.
Yeah, I think heading into next season, they, I mean, they should have, they're definitely going to lose to Lewis, but they're going to have Josh Wiley back for hopefully most of the, hopefully the entire season. I mean, he doesn't get injured again. I think they're definitely going to miss Michi Harris since he's transferring out. But yeah, I think the receiving core should be a little better next year, especially because we've seen also that Denbrock has now a willingness to use the tight end in the passing game, which we haven't seen in a little while here. So there should be some more options for Ritter to throw to in the passing game. Newcomer of the year, guys, who do you have? Let's start with Scott.
My newcomer of the year, I would go with Tavion Thomas. I thought he really stepped into the role of the second back, like, pretty well. Like, he and McClellan split it a ton, but I thought he stood out a little bit more. Like, they used him in the goal line a lot, 7 touchdowns, like, nearly 500 yards. He would be my pick. I thought he really played well when he got a chance. And I thought he even should have got some more carries, but they rode Michael Warren a ton.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. What do you have, Matt?
I mean, to be the obvious guy, but it's Dez.
Yeah.
This team does not go 11-2 if Hayden Moore is a quarterback. And that's just a fact. You can tell like the change in the team as soon as he got in that third drive. And like from that moment on, like the switch was flipped, and this was a completely different team. And they went on to have one of the best seasons in school history, largely because they had a guy back there who everyone has utter confidence in. Hayden Moore he's been a productive player. He's done a lot of good things. He still owns the record for most passing yards in a game in 3 quarters. But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have that factor that Dez does. And that's not to denigrate Hayden Moore. He's been a very, you know, good player to above average player for his entire career. But the ceiling of Dez is just 3 or 4 floors above where Hayden was able to get. And that's what has everybody so excited about this program right now. Because they have that quarterback for the first time in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I picked, so I kind of went a little bit different. I picked Steve Stripling coming back this season. And we saw the talent that Cortez Broughton is and what Marquise Copeland is, but Stripling's ability to once again come to UC and develop and make a good group of players into one cohesive defensive line unit was incredible again. I mean, he turned Derek Wolf and John Hughes into one of the best defensive tackle pairings that this school has ever seen. It seemed arguably he's done it again with Broughton and Copeland. He was such a huge pickup in the offseason. And I don't know. I don't know if this defense is probably still pretty good if he's not here, but I feel like just the impact he made before Butch Jones left for Tennessee and the impact he made again when he came back to the program was really telling along that defensive line. But, I mean, to your point, Scott, picking Tavion Thomas, I think that was actually my number two because I feel like he didn't get a lot of run this season only because Michael Warren was the guy and had such a strong year. But if he goes down, I mean, it seems like it basically is Tavion Thomas's team. And in the times he did play, he ran hard. He ran like the 6'2", 200-pound back that he is. I'm really excited to see what he can do in this program going forward, assuming he actually stays here. Any other potential newcomers you guys have mentioned?
Yeah, like McClelland deserves a mention. Like, he was pretty great. He had the big touchdown in the bowl game. Just like stat-wise, it was like only one game. Like Arquan Bush, like had like 3 turnovers in one game against East Carolina. Like he only played in I think like 3 or 4 games. So, will he be a redshirt? I think that's how that works.
Yes, he will be a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, and it's like you have somebody who it was against East Carolina, but still, 3 turnovers, 1 game. something.
No, but Bush is the guy that everybody has been talking about around the program since camp because he was incredibly impressive for his first, you know, first full fall camp. And, you know, when he didn't play earlier in the year, I was kind of wondering what that was about. And, you know, he comes out, you know, with his hair on fire in the ECU game. It was very good in the Virginia Tech game again. He's one to watch for sure.
Yeah, he only played against Alabama, A&M, UConn, then a long way off the East Carolina and then Virginia Tech. Then, like, Jayshon Jackson, like you guys mentioned him earlier, like he had a pretty good freshman season, 33 targets, 23 catches, like the best catch rate out of all the regulars, 278 yards, 2 touchdowns, like really solid freshman year from him.
Yeah, the only other one I was potentially going to mention was Cam Jeffries coming in from Bowling Green. You know, I guess technically following probably Mike Mickens from Bowling Green. There's a lot of youth in that secondary, a lot of talent back there, but I felt like he came in and provided a lot of stability at the cornerback position. He, you know, he got abused a little bit in the Virginia Tech game, but, you know, overall had a very, very nice season, you know, coming into the program for the first time.
Yeah, and that's a good call. That's a guy who's going to have to really – like, he was good this year, but he's going to – he's got to fight on his hands to keep his job for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, especially Arquan Bush. I don't know how you don't have Arquan Bush and Kobe Bryant as the starting cornerbacks next year, but nice to have depth. Most valuable player. Let's start – who did we do, Scott, last time? We start Matt. Most valuable player.
I don't know if we're supposed to give out multiple awards for the same player, but Dez.
Yeah.
I just think in terms of what he brought to this team and what he brings to this program, I don't think there's anybody who's quite on his level. Michael Warren was outstanding, but this team doesn't go 11-2 if they still have Michael Warren and Hayden Morris, the quarterback.
Yeah, and Scott, not to jump to you because I also had Dez too for those exact reasons. I had this team a 6-6, 7-5 team with Hayden Moore at the quarterback position. I don't know what they do. I had no idea that Desmond Ridder was going to bring that much ability to the quarterback position. You know, an actual accurate quarterback with a very live arm who can also outrun a defense. I had Dez Ridder as my most valuable for those exact reasons. Who'd you have, Scott?
I had Ridder too. But my runner-up was Khalil Lewis because of the Ridder thing. Like, he was the security blanket, the highest targeted receiver, the best receiver they had on the team. When he struggled, like, the team struggled. Like, one catch against Temple. He didn't really have a great game against Virginia Tech, but Ridder didn't really play in that game. Like, he didn't really do much early, but Ridder didn't really do much early. Like, then, like, an Alabama A&M game when the offense exploded, he had 92 yards. Against SMU, 12 catches, 174 yards, 2 touchdowns. Had 3 touchdowns, 200 yards against East Carolina. And, like, really consistent the entire season outside of, like, his slow start, which could be, like, blame on the conditions in the Miami game. Just the game plan against UCLA. But I think, like, as, like, the top guy, like, the biggest, not the biggest, but the, like, longest tenured guy on the offense. Like, he really carried his weight this year and was really great. And he scored a touchdown in the bowl game. 10 touchdown season.
Yeah, and that's a great point with Lewis. What's really interesting about this offense this year is, especially with the passing game, you can break it into halves. And it's pretty delineated in terms of the first half of the year and the last half of the year. The first half of the year, Dez was very much a flats and screen guy, didn't really challenge the middle that much, kept it to the perimeter, didn't really, you know, take big chances down the field. But then, like you said, somewhere around that Alabama A&M game, the UConn game, they started pushing the ball vertically. And when they started doing that, that brought Lewis into the fold. And I think he had almost 2/3 of his yards came in the back half of the year. And that's, you know, that really shows the growth of Ritter as a quarterback, because, you know, the middle of the field is a scary place for a young quarterback. And for some people, it stays a scary place for their entire career. But by the midway point of his first season, Ritter's already very comfortable challenging the middle of the field. And he's very successful at it because he has a 20-5 touchdown INT ratio, which is outstanding for a freshman quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. Most improved player, who would you have, Matt?
Cortez Broughton.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody saw this coming. He's always had the talent. Like, I remember going on this podcast and raving about him before his freshman year, and he was an immediate starter and, you know, kind of showed this vast promise. And then for his sophomore and his junior season, didn't really live up to that potential. And this year, Steve Stripling tapped every ounce of that potential, and to great effect. He was an amazing player, and he's going to be incredibly difficult to replace.
My breakout would be DeGuara, because he hadn't really done anything like his first two seasons. Only 15 total catches, no touchdowns, and like he just goes crazy. Like as you mentioned, Matt, once their passing game changed, like he kind of like fell out of like the targets, but like, he bounced back against East Carolina. But, like at the beginning of the season, especially, he was so crucial to the offense, and like he at least gave like defenses somebody they had to watch and pay attention to, and like keep have another option to keep him honest if they just focus in on Khalil Lewis. And even like the run game with Mike Warren, like they like allowed them to get some breathing room. I think he did a really good job this season.
Yeah, I picked Mike Warren, not because he had a poor, you know, 2017 campaign, but just the complete breakout he had this year. And I mean, a lot of it was a lot of the reasons why he got so much run this season was because Doakes was out. But he still put up, you know, a 1,300-yard season, 19 touchdowns on 244 attempts. He was the guy that ran this offense most of the time. By about the quarter part of the season, defensive coordinators were keying in on him, and he still put up, an MVP-type campaign. He complemented that with a very good passing game, averaged 10 yards per catch, and had another touchdown in the passing game. He had just an overall outstanding year, just statistically a huge jump from last season. He was my most improved player. I think Scott DeGuara was definitely also up there too. He was my number two pick. But yeah, I had to give it to Warren just from what he did statistically this year.
Yeah, you can't really go wrong with somebody who had 1,000 more yards than they did last season.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that good? Is that a good improvement? That's positive, right? 1,000 more?
I'm going to have to check the math. I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody expected him to break and challenge for multiple school records in his sophomore season. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Bodes well going forward. Most valuable assistant coach. I guess you could pick coordinator. I mean, in my mind, I was kind of thinking like positional. But, let's start with you, Scott. Who do you have?
If we're going positional, I would say the secondary coach, who I don't know who it is because I'm not looking at the coach roster. Like, the secondary was like much maligned the last few years. A lot of big plays given up. And especially no interceptions. It seemed like they hadn't got an interception since, like, 2010. And, like, they really came through this season with, like, Wiggins obviously had big numbers. We just mentioned, Bryant and Bush both had two interceptions. And the coverage as a whole, it seemed, was a lot better, a lot tighter. Like, nobody really exploited them through the air, even, like, in the losses. I guess, like, Temple kind of did, but they made big plays against Temple. Like, Bryant had a couple of picks in that game. And even Central Florida, when they picked them apart, they didn't pick them apart in the air. They really did it on the ground. And I think that was my biggest my biggest like surprise with the defense as a whole.
Well, you're cheating, Matt, because you picked two coaches, because Mike Mickens coaches the cornerbacks, and the immortal John Tenuta coaches the safety. Seriously, Tenuta is
the ice road chucker, John Tenuta.
then I'll
Jesse, have you guys seen the pictures of John Tenuta? He looks like an ice road trucker. I'll send them to you after this. Go ahead, Scott.
Then if I had to pick one, I'd pick... I picked Tenuta just because of Wiggins.
Yeah, Scott, I did the same thing. I picked the secondaries, forgetting that if Mike Mickens doesn't coach all of the secondary, he just coaches the cornerback. So I picked Mickens, thinking he coached the whole thing. But yeah, I'd probably have to give him both big credit there. Their ability to play shutdown defense. I mean, UC rushed. It probably blitzed at least a third or 40% of the time, leaving the defense in man-to-man coverage on the back end, and a lot of that coverage was being held down by freshmen and sophomores, and the ability for Mike Mickens and John Tenuta to really instill the confidence on the back end was really impressive this season. They looked back for the ball for the first time in like 5 years. I've seen them do that. They racked up a lot of interceptions. They did everything that you could want out of cornerbacks and safeties, and I think a lot of that came down to those positional coaches. Who do you have, Matt?
Ron Crook, the offensive line coach. Yeah. And that's frankly, they did a great job. Mickens is really young in his journey, is going to be he's already a well-thought-of coach, but he's going to be a coordinator and potentially higher down the road. That's the kind of potential that he has. But what Crook did this year is nothing short of amazing. You took a group of five guys, one of which had played before, and you somehow fashioned an offense that gains almost 6,000 yards, is extremely productive, does things that nobody thought was possible, and they did it behind an offensive line that... And we joked all year, was held together with spit and duct tape with a former hockey player and, Chris Ferguson, who had literally not played a snap of football before this year and ended up being your right tackle and kind of held down the fort. Dino Boyd transfers in from Rhode Island and becomes first team all conference left tackle. That's weird. Just what they did with this group is remarkable. And it gets overlooked because it's the offensive line and nobody thinks offensive line play is sexy. But what this group did was damn sexy. Like, shit. Nobody expected that. Nobody expected this. And that doesn't happen if Ron Crook does not create something magical out of this group of cast-offs and kind of random parts. And he makes those five guys, one unit, and the way they performed was incredible.
Yeah, that's a fair point about the offensive line. It's like one of those things, like last year, we complained about the offensive line like the entire season. And then like when they're good, we're like, oh yeah, they should be good. That's what they're here for. And, like, they kind of just go overlooked. So that was a good pick.
I kind of wish I had picked that pick. That was a good one.
It's not just... this like last year where the offensive line is bad. Like, they have not had a good offensive line in like 6-7 years. It's been quite a while. Because even those groups that were high flying, aerial shows, the offensive line was the weakness of those offenses, and it showed anytime they played a top flight team. They got handled up front frequently.
You mean how Tony Pike got stuffed like on third and fourth and goal in the Orange Bowl? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, no. Like, I wasn't going back that far. I was thinking more like the Gunnar Kiel days.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, the offensive line has been a consistent problem that has not been solved for the Bearcats in quite a long time. And, they got something they can build on now. Even though all those guys are gone. I think next year's offensive line is going to be even better because... Ron Crook gets to work with slightly better materials this time.
He gets to work with offensive linemen.
Well, yeah, he gets to work with offensive linemen who are legitimately talented and might not have the experience that this past group had, but they're very good. So, yeah, that's really exciting going forward.
Yeah, one of us has to shout out Gino for, like, his work with the quarterback.
I almost picked Gino. Yeah, I almost picked Gino. But
that was it. I just wanted to shout out Gino.
He's going to be an offensive coordinator someday. Maybe here. Who are you guys most excited to have back next season? Be it, I pick player, but be it, you know, coach. I don't know, Matt, you can pick philosophy again. I don't know. Pick anything.
For me, it's Marcus Freeman. And I'm knocking on wood here because generally coordinators don't really change until after the signing period, which is really shitty, but it is what it is. But it looks like they're going to hold on to him, and that's all for the better. This group, with another year in the same scheme, I just can't wait to see it.
Who do you have, Scott?
I'm going to go off the board. I'm going to pick James Smith, who was one of the best punters this year. That 44 yards net, like, really flip field position, 20 of his punts inside the 20, like a third of his punts. Pretty good. Like, 46-yard average, 44 net is really good. Like, the cover, he's, like, did a lot with the coverage unit, but he had a really great year. And, like, you can't really overlook the punting game, especially when it comes, like, field position, which is something we talked about, like, a ton last year. And, like, that's a set UC was really able to flip this season. Like, their opponents started at the 28-yard line, like, which is, like, not, like, the best in the nation, but compared to where UC opponents started last season, it was, like, a huge boost for the defense and, like, one of the reasons why they played so well. So you can afford to give up some yards and then shut teams down. So, guy went with somebody different and shout out the punter as well.
No, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially when we've seen, like, what guys like Kevin Huber and Pat O'Donnell have been able to do with coming through the program. I sort of kind of went a similar direction as Matt, and I picked a defensive player. I went James Wiggins just because, you know, another year of having a linebacker-sized safety out there who has the ball skills of a cornerback but has the hitting skills of a Haruki Nakamura. I'm giddy just seeing maybe two more years of James Wiggins floating around there in the safety position. He had an excellent kind of pretty first year at UC. I mean, first full season at UC, and I'm pumped to see what he has coming in next year. Do you guys have anyone else to add? I mean, I have a couple of others of that we didn't really get to see, but, like, I'm kind of excited to see them. But do you guys have any others you'd potentially add?
Yeah, Josh Wiley is a guy I'm really excited to see. He was really robbed of his freshman season with injuries, and, you know, this group coming back receiver is unlike anything else that the Bearcats have had, because usually the Bearcats are really heavy on receivers and have a tight end or two. Like, the most tight end heavy offense UC's had was the group with Adrian Robinson and Travis Kelce as juniors. And this tight end group is really something special. And it was going to be something special even before DeGuara had his breakout this year. Right, because you got DeGuara, you have Leonard Taylor, you have Wiley. Like, Wiley is a matchup nightmare. Same thing with Leonard Taylor. They have so many options with what they can do with this tight end room. And that's not even counting, you know, guys like Wilson Huber, who is not a frequent target, but was an outstanding blocker. Like, he was a real dog when it came to run blocking. And what they're going to be able to do with, you know, personnel groups and matchups and kind of forcing the defense's hand is going to be fun to watch. And after the game plan they drew up for Dez in the Military Bowl, I really have faith in this offensive staff to fully utilize all those talents, and that'll be something fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, like Fickell coming back, I think, I don't think it was necessary to make, for him to come back to be excited about next year, but with him coming back and probably bringing the staff back, I think that's something that definitely can't be underlooked. Because we mentioned it last week, but their schedule gets a little bit trickier next year. Like, they play Ohio State. So, I mean, like, they have, like, one game they'll probably definitely lose. And, like, they host UCLA.
Maybe. You never know.
Like, any team that's, got, top three buzz is going to be a tough team to beat on the road. And when's the last time they actually beat Ohio State? But anyway.
The 40s?
Never.
But that's not the point. Like, with him coming back, that would be, I think that gives them, the top 25 buzz that they'll need to, make it, any type of Access Bowl push. And to stay in the conversation, even if, they drop, a couple of their games early.
Yeah, we can definitely jump to that final, topic today. What are you guys' regular season prediction for next season? I mean, assuming Fickell's back, assuming most of the staff is back. I mean, you guys mentioned it earlier. I mean, Marcus Freeman, who knows if Michigan's going to replace some of the guys who lost to Ohio State by poaching Freeman, but as of this podcast, 11:54 on January 9th, he's still a Bearcat. What do you guys have for the 12 regular season games next year?
Just real quick, the last time UC beat Ohio State was 1897, so it's been a minute.
Ah.
But they have done it. I didn't think that happened.
Does once in a blue moon even apply in that situation, or is that further back than that?
I mean, they have beat them twice in the history of playing football, so that's good.
Okay. Okay. What do you have, Matt, for a regular season prediction for next year?
I think 11-2 AAC champs and group of five, Access Bowl, whatever you want to call it. I think that's – I really like the way that this schedule sets up, having UCLA, which really showed signs of life down the stretch, at home to open. Then you get the Ohio State game, and if they don't need to – they really don't even need to beat Ohio State to put their name on the radar for people. They just need to have a repeat of the 2002 game where it's down to the wire and they have a chance to win at the end. They don't even necessarily have to take that chance, but just to be in it to that level will change the perception of this team for the rest of the year and will probably give them a little bit of a bump. Similar to the way that it did with Appalachian State this year and Penn State. Now, it turned out that Penn State was kind of shitty, and it wasn't as much of a bump as everybody hoped, but that was a team that nobody was talking about, and then everybody was talking about. So you got that game, but I think it really helps that they have Temple and UCF coming to Nippert. They should be able to win both those games. I really believe that. It's not going to be easy, but I think they can get both of them done. It's going to be interesting to see how they break out the schedule in terms of when those games fall. But this is the AAC. They're really smart about scheduling. Those two games will be in November, guaranteed. So that gives them a chance late in the year to really, stake a claim.
Yeah, I think just with the schedule that we know, their opponents, I think 9-3, 10-2 is doable. So I don't really know how good Memphis is going to be next season. I don't really know what they have coming back. Isn't their quarterback leave? I'm pretty sure he does.
Yeah, Brady White was a senior, I believe.
Yeah, and then the running back just declared, right?
Yeah, he declared. But
thank God for that.
That's going to be a tough game. Houston's probably going to be tough because they always have a ton of talent. I think UCLA and Ohio State back-to-back to open the season, I don't think you can start much bigger than that. One way or another, if you go 1-1 or 2-0 or 0-2, that would be something to adjust for the rest of the season. I think even if they started 0-2, worst-case scenario, they could still win the conference or at least win the East. I believe in the talent coming back.
Yeah, I have 12-1. I think their only loss is against Ohio State. I think at this point, I mean, this is what better opportunity do you have to beat Ohio State? They're going to have turnover at quarterback. Urban Meyer's not there. Ryan Day looks like a very capable head coach. I mean, at least they're paying him like one. But in terms of like what UC is returning compared to what Ohio State is, UC is never going to have a better chance to beat Ohio State than on September 7th of this year. I still kind of peg it as a loss just because, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, Scott. I mean, they're going to be like a top three team probably. And it is Ohio State at Ohio State. But I think this team runs through the entire AAC schedule. I think they beat Temple and UCF at home. I don't think they have as much of a difficulty on the road as maybe the schedule insinuates, especially going to Houston and Memphis. I think it's they win the AAC championship and they get the Access Bowl.
I think the toughest part is like just deciding like where these games come. It's like we know they're going to end the season with East Carolina since they're rivals for some reason. It just depends. Like if they play like go to Houston, go to Memphis, like as their first two conference games, or go to Houston True. And like host Temple, then I don't know, go to the USF. After going to Marshall, who like is a decent team, that's a pretty tough slate. And like you just end up with like schedule losses, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say. If they can start like the year with like the Tulsa and the UConn, they normally play UConn early. It's like that should be like an easy win to like ease into conference play. But then like the back half of your conference slate is really loaded. It just depends on where some of these games fall. But I think that they can definitely compete with all these teams. I don't think anybody really stands out too much. And Temple doesn't even have a coach yet. So they're really hard to get a
read. I didn't even think about that, yeah. I completely forgot that Manny Diaz went back to Miami. And like to that point, I mean, Houston, they got Holmes. They're paying him well. But, I mean, that's a coaching turnover there. Yeah, it seems like at this point, it seems like it's parity between UCF and Cincinnati to win the conference. And UCF has to go to Nippert, which is probably going to be a night game, probably going to be in November. And I mean, who knows how Mackenzie Milton's going to be coming back after that almost amputating leg injury. I mean, who knows? So I feel like the schedule in the AAC at least favors them to completely run the table.
It really depends on how they line up those games. Because if your November is, like, worst case scenario, here's your worst case scenario. Memphis, Houston, UCF, Temple, November. I really like this team coming back. I really, really like it. But, man, that's a big chunk of work to break off. And not saying they can't do it, but that's if they line up that way, I like their team. I like their chances in every individual game, but that combination in a row, that would get a little dicey.
Yeah.
But we still don't know how they're going to break out the schedule. You know, the AAC likes to have a kind of big conference game really early. It's going to be difficult to do that with UC's schedule, with UCLA and Ohio State, when those games fall. But if they get one of those games broken off into September, that would be helpful.
Yeah, and to your point, they're probably going to try to put, like, what, UCF at the end of the season? I can't imagine that they're going to put, like, Houston or Memphis, potential favorites to win the West, as the final game of the season. I can't remember what they did this past season or the season prior to that, but I kind of figure they're probably going to put like Houston and or Memphis in like October, right?
I would hope so. Like they've done Houston in the third week of September before. I was at that game. It was not fun. Ed Oliver did a lot of Ed Oliver things, and I don't mean fighting about jackets.
Yeah, and like UC really hasn't played anything really consistent. It's like, as you mentioned, like, Matt, like, the league kind of schedules for like teams to be good and bad. It's like you think UC is like the end of their season schedule is going to be like backloaded as hell.
Yeah, they do everything they can to guarantee that they're going to have at least one, but hopefully more relevant games, especially in that, especially during SoCon Saturday. Like, that's the only reason Day went to UCF is because of when that game was scheduled. So they don't necessarily target the last, you know, that Black Friday game. They target the week before that.
And, like, you know, like, UCF and USF are going to end their season against each other. Like, that's been, like, the one consistent. UC's, like, end-of-season opponent has gone from, like, Tulsa to UConn to East Carolina. Like, it's really bounced up and down. But it seems like those two teams have played every year at the end on Black Friday. It's like, that would be, like, one relief. And it depends, like, if they get any, like, weekday games, which, like, throw really another wrench into any of this. So we know, like, the early season schedule is, like, already set. They have no bye weeks at the beginning of the season. Or they have the 21st of September as their bye week. It's like, if that's their only bye week throughout the regular season, that's another, like, really tough schedule.
I have to think that 21st slot will be filled by a conference game. And they'll push their bye into somewhere into October. That's kind of a little bit more fair than throwing it at the beginning of the season. Like that one year where they had two byes to start the season, that was awesome. That was the Tuberville era at its finest.
It seems like that would probably be the spot where they play UConn, since they UConn or Tulsa, I would imagine. Unless they just go on the road, then you end up on a tough road game, then another tough road game at Marshall. So it'd be nice to have like a pillow the game against like Tulsa or. Even, like, early season Temple hasn't really been that great, no matter the struggles they've given UC. And they have, like, their quarterback coming back, so, like, they should at least be potent offensively.
Yep. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to mention, or do you want to wrap this up? I got to get going, but you guys are more than welcome to chat for the next 35 to 45 minutes.
I mean, I'm a man of leisure now because I have vacation.
I think you just scared everybody who was listening into us like going off on our weird tangents for the next half an hour. So we can we can put a bow on this one, unless you guys have any other fun facts to add about this season or any weird award to give out.
No, I'm good.
Well, and that wraps it up for the football season. We may come back for a recruiting podcast. Who knows how we'll feel about that one. But thanks for listening this season. And go Bearcats.